This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Carlson Fish Oils. Fish oil provides the vital omega-3s, EPA and DHA, which support cardiovascular, brain and nerve, vision, immune system, joint, and skin health. Carlson ensures maximum freshness by managing their fish oils from sea to shelf. All Carlson fish oils are tested by an FDA-registered laboratory for freshness, potency, and purity, and they're available in soft gels and liquid form. For more information, go to carlsonlabs.com. Carlson fish oils are available at fine health food stores nationwide. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and we're with Dr. Wayne Jonas, who's really a pioneer in mainstreaming complementary and alternative medicine. He's been working with the government as part of the National Institutes of Health, as well as with the military. And he is a real stalwart of this movement. I've known him for the past couple of decades, at the very least. He was part of the Samuel A. Institute initiative to study complementary and alternative medicine. They now have a research grant, which they gave to UC Irvine, the Susan and Henry Samuel A. College of Health Science, to study, research, validate, or invalidate, if the case may be, many of the therapies that we like to think are part of the natural medicine armamentarium. So coming back to our discussion, Dr. Jonas, placebo has a very negative connotation in medicine. It's like, you know, sometimes in my training, they would say, you know, I was an inexperienced young doctor. I might have given a very low dose of a medication to a patient. And my supervising physician would say, well, you just gave him a placebo. Why don't you give him a real dose of medication? And so we'd up the medication and hope for an effect. But you have actually quite a lot of interest in the placebo phenomenon. You've written about it and studied it.
Yes, I have. It's been one of my main interests for quite a long time. And the reason for that is that the term itself has derailed us from understanding some very important things in how healing works. And I describe this actually in the book in one of my chapters on this. We've used the term placebo to mean different things. It is, in some cases to mean an inert pill that you're giving somebody to test whether another treatment or an active treatment is effective or not. But at the same time, the effects that occur when you give somebody an inactive treatment produce very often the majority of the effects and the majority of the recovery effects, or at least they occur after that. And we now know that those effects occur not because of the inert pill, but because we go through healing rituals that activate our own inherent healing capacity. And so I've written with Dan Moorman from the University of Michigan and others that we need to, and I write this about this in the book, we need to rename the placebo effect as the meaning response. Because if we take the lid off of placebo, understand how it actually works, it actually provides, this 80% of healing that we're talking about. And so it's important that we begin to look at it. I call it the sleeping elephant in medical science. Once we wake up to the underlying mechanisms whereby, you know, we see the healing effects when we're not using active treatments, then we know what we need to use to optimize any treatment, whether you call it conventional, complementary, whatever. And I give lots of examples in my book about how when we optimize these underlying processes of healing that we now have covered up with the term placebo effect, we will be able to unleash this inherent healing capacity and apply it no matter what kind of treatment your doctor's providing in their particular practice.
There's a story in the news. It's actually quite recent, February 9th, 2018. Headline, placebo pills prescribed honestly help cancer survivors manage symptoms. Now, what's really interesting about this particular research is that contrary to what happens with a lot of placebos, you don't tell the patient that it's a placebo and you say, here, take this, you're going to feel better. And through the power of suggestion, the patient feels better. In this case, they actually labeled these things placebo. In fact, with each packet of pills, there was a little insert that said, this is a placebo. Cellulose powder and cotton linters are in these pills. But cancer patients who experienced fatigue had improvements in their tiredness scores. So what's up with that? That's an amazing study.
Well, the reason we find that so amazing is because most people are operating under a myth that placebo works simply by believing it. And this myth is now popped. It's not true, actually. And the person who's done the pioneering work on that, and many others have followed him, is Ted Kapchick from Harvard Medical School,
I know Ted.
Who runs a center for placebo studies. And what we believe does have an influence. That's been shown, you know. However, it's not the biggest influence, what you're just thinking in your head. It's more about the ritual of going through a therapeutic encounter with another person, in a way in which your culture and you get then conditioned to respond, and your body is conditioned to respond by that ritual.
Right.
And those are the underlying mechanisms whereby placebo works. And so it matters less whether you believe in the pill itself than you go through the ritual. And, Dr. Kapchick and others have shown that if you go through the ritual properly, then you can do this. I tell several stories in my book about, I tell one about Norma, an older woman with osteoarthritis who I was doing was one of my patients. And then she entered into a study I was doing to see if a vitamin, vitamin B3 worked for osteoarthritis.
Right, the old niacinamide cure for osteoarthritis.
Niacinamide, exactly.
Yeah. William Kaufman, 1963, I think it was.
Exactly, and I knew Dr. Kaufman, and I actually looked at his data, and he had done a lot of good observational data, but he'd not done a placebo-controlled trial. So I decided to do that, and I entered this patient, Norma, into that study. Now, neither she nor I knew what she was taking. But as soon as she started in the study and started taking the pill, she got remarkably better. Her pain improved, her function improved. She went back. She was a volunteer at the hospital and had to stop that because of her pain previously to the trial. And she went back. And I thought, oh man, I validated what Dr. Kaufman has claimed, and we found a cure for arthritis, et cetera. And when I broke the blind, we found out that she was actually taking the placebo. And as it turns out, the reason she got better has to do with what I describe in the book as the meaning effect. She had discovered that if she worked through her pain and began to continue to be active even through her pain, and she did that by doing what she loved in the world. She loved to go in the hospital. She was a volunteer that brought books around to patients on a cart. And she just loved doing that. It was her social interaction. It gave her meaning in her life. And when she just did that, despite her pain, she began to move more. And the movement, actually, we now know from good research, helps with arthritis. And so she was actually getting better because she had found her path through healing. Now, it had been started by taking a placebo pill, but what it had done is it had motivated her to identify the core parts of her spirit, her mind and spirit, that then drove her into a behavior that helped her arthritis.
This is
how I discovered how healing actually works, and I described the components of that in my book.
Well, do we undermine the placebo effect with our current medical system, whereby you wait in a crowded waiting room for an hour and a half, nervously eyeing your watch, and finally you're ushered in to see a quote healthcare practitioner who might be a cog in the wheel of a multi practitioner group practice of someone you may or may not have seen. Their communication abilities are not great. They peer into an EMR screen, entering data without making eye contact with you, and then they hastily push a prescription towards you. Is that conducive to leveraging the placebo effect?
Absolutely not. And in fact, what we do, unfortunately, with that kind of a practice is that we leave a vast majority of healing that you can get on the table, untouched, or worse yet, we actually invoke it in a negative way that harms people because we're not aware of what we're doing. There is something called the nocebo effect, which is the harm that occurs from giving somebody an inert substance with the expectation and the ritual that it might hurt them. And there's ongoing research showing that that works also just as much as the placebo or the positive effect occurs. And if your doctor and you are not aware of that going on, then you're gonna get hurt. And so it's essential that physicians are aware of how their words and how the rituals that they go through, the environment that the practice is, and how they address the cultural expectations of what they do, is either hurting or harming or helping patients, and then incorporate that in an educated, evidence-based way into their day-to-day practice. And patients need to be aware of this also so that they are not subjected to these risks.
Well, you recently participated in a fascinating paper entitled, "To What Extent Are Surgery and Invasive Procedures Effective Beyond a Placebo Response?" Now, surely surgery fixes something in the body. It's a material effect. Our structure is altered with surgery. And yet, through your analysis, you conclude that some surgical procedures really are not much better than placebo. And in fact, they came up with that conclusion when they studied stents for people who had stable angina recently. In other words, they didn't have incapacitating pain. They had periodic pain that could be managed with medications. And they divided study group into two parts. One group got meds, the other group got stents. And at the end of the day, they were equivalent.
That's right. One of the first conferences that I brought together back in 1996 when I ran the Office of Alternative Medicine at NIH was a group studying placebo because I knew it was one, if we could understand how it works, then it was something that cut across all both alternative and conventional medical practices. And of course, the conventional medical system, when they were more skeptical about these, insisted on placebo-controlled studies in acupuncture, for example, but didn't in surgery. And yet, if you look at the underlying mechanisms of placebo, the importance of authority, of belief, of cultural belief, of ritual, surgery should have a tremendous placebo effect,
right?
And especially in the West, where we believe in surgery. Now, surgery is unbelievable when you need an anatomical thing changed. If you need a tumor removed, if you need your knee replaced, if you need something to go in and get corrected, if you have, necrotic bowel that needs to be taken out, again, this is unbelievable. It produces miracles. It saves your life. But increasingly, surgery is applied to functional conditions like Sally's back pain that I talked about in the first part of this podcast, in which there's really not an anatomical problem, or at least the anatomical problem is not what's causing the pain.
You can always see an anatomical problem if you do an MRI in an individual over 40 years of age.
Exactly. A lot of normal people with no pain have, disc things if they get a CT or an MRI. That's exactly right. And so increasingly, but these are applied to functional pain problems and chronic pain problems. And so we wanted to know, how much of this is placebo effect? Well, as it turns out, rarely, if ever, are placebo studies done in surgery. They're very controversial, as you can imagine. I mean, you know, putting somebody under anesthesia and doing
hard
surgery
to do in the United States for ethical reasons.
Surgery.
Yeah,
it is. I mean, and there's a lot of legitimate argument for not doing it. But the study that we did, you referred to in the British Medical Journal Open, tried to collect all the studies that were for non-anatomical corrections that surgery is good for, and see if there was a placebo arm in that, a sham surgery arm, how much of the effect was from the actual surgery, the actual active tissue manipulation. And as expected, actually, we found that the vast majority of studies that had a good sham arm and did a good study, they showed that most of the effect occurred from this ritual. It occurred from simply going through the ritual in, you know, knee pain, for example, knee arthritis,
yep,
and back pain,
that's a big
for
one.
Example. You know, in which
you get a lot
many,
of attention, you get a lot of physical therapy.
Done.
I mean, it really seals the deal for compliance with a program of rigorous physical therapy. Right?
It does. And so, and most of the effect seems to occur from those other things, not from the actual surgery. Now, the surgery gets you launched on it, right? But it's not the surgery that's doing it. And so this opens up the question of, should we be looking at this more carefully? Because, you know, surgery is not a benign thing to do. There's a lot of side effects from it, and it costs a lot.
Indeed.
So, anyway, so that's something that I've been interested in looking at, not because I'm interested in debunking you know, alternative or conventional medicine, but because I think if we understand actually where healing comes from and how it works, we can optimize the healing response across all kinds of therapy. And that's really why I wrote the book.
One part of the medical system that has been particularly receptive, and I think you've been really an instigator to some extent, is the military, you know, with the VA programs and Tracy Gaudet there. There's a lot of inroads that integrative medicine has made into, well, you know, it's single payer, it's government-sponsored medicine, but they seem to be, you know, maybe that's a fertile ground for intervention.
Well, it is. And I've worked, you know, in the military and then for the military and then with the military for many decades. And my experience is that they're very pragmatic. They want to make sure something works, and then they want to deploy it and make sure it gets out there so they can do their job. And so we did a lot of work with the military when I ran the Sanuelli Institute for 15 years. And we did things with programs for them called battlefield acupuncture, mind-body practices, nutrition and teaching kitchens, for example.
Wow.
And once we had looked at that with them, alongside them, and they saw the benefits of those things, they immediately began to implement it. And so now you see the military and the VA beginning to implement evidence-based whole person care systems like gangbusters. And so in some of the best approaches actually come from the military. And right now what I'm doing with the Sanuelli is just trying to get the rest of the country to kind of get on board with this and realize what they've already realized, which is whole person care is the kind of care that's going to help solve our chronic illness problem.
So in your ideal world, where would you like to see the U.S. healthcare system, say, in 20 years? Do you think, I mean, obviously, you know, over your career, you've seen some setbacks, but you've also seen some major advances and triumphs. Do you see this taking hold?
I think it will be. You know, we're moving in that direction. The young physicians are moving in that direction. A lot of policymakers are saying we have to go in that direction. It goes under various names. The name that is being used now is called value-based medicine or person-centered care, for example, instead of volume-based medicine, which is where you make money by doing a whole person care and getting good outcomes rather than just doing, you know, pills and procedures. And I think this is the direction that we have to go. It's, you know, just the way good chronic care medicine is going to occur. So I think, you know, even though it sometimes feels like we're taking, you know, two steps forward and three steps back, I think ultimately we have to go in this direction, and that's what's going to happen. At the back of the book, I describe how this can happen already. You don't have to wait for this to happen. If you're a a listener who's a patient and or somebody with chronic illness, you can begin to do this now. I give specific instructions in the appendix of my book on how you can access the 80% of healing and where it comes from. And I also write how you can do this in partnership with your physician. I do something I call the Hope Note when I see patients. This is stands for Healing Oriented Practices and Environments Note. And it's a set of questions that you go through with your physician that addresses the underlying determinants of health, and looking at which ones can be personalized and implemented in your life now. And so I think we don't have to wait very long to make this happen. You can make this happen now, and I encourage patients to give a copy of the book to their physician, to ask them to do an integrative visit using the Hope Note. And on my website, drwaynejonas.com, we're continually populating this with tools that you can use in your own life and that your physician can also use to begin to do this right now. So I don't think we have to wait for health reform to come. If we do, we may be waiting a long time. But you can start doing the health reform that's needed right now in your own practice and in your own life.
It's a grassroots movement, and rather than wait for some outside agency to implement it, we can begin implementing it in our own lives and with our own actions. There's another website, an informative website, howhealingworks.org. What can people find there?
So howhealingworks.org goes directly to the book and the book site, and so if you want to purchase the book, you can go there. It is available widely on, you know, normal channels through, you know, Barnes and Noble and Amazon and all that type of thing too. So, How Healing Works goes there. If you, my website, drwaynejonas.com, is where a lot of the tools we're continually upgrading and inputting. And we're working very closely with mainstream organizations to get good evidence-based tools and get them out into the healthcare system now. And I think if you point your doctor to those, you go to those yourself and find those tools, and then and then look at the back of the book in terms of the guide. This is something you can begin to do and make sure you're not leaving, the underlying aspects that bring you health and well-being on the table.
And if you order the book through howhealingworks.org, it looks like you get a premium, a free download of your guide, A Patient's Guide to Pain. What will patients learn from that?
That's correct. So we've produced and are continually producing a number of specific things that patients can learn about and use. The Patient's Guide to Pain is what the current evidence shows works, that non-drug approaches to pain, how you find it, how you ask your doctors about it, how you make sure that the person that you work with is well-trained and is based in evidence, so you're getting good treatment in those areas. And then we also have other guides there for other conditions that we're loading all the time, as well as if you take care of somebody with a chronic illness, what do you need to do to make sure that you are healthy enough to provide them with the kind of care that they need? There's a guide that we originally developed for the military because a lot of military folks have chronic illnesses when they've come back from the war with TBI and PTSD and chronic pain. And so a caregiver's guide is something that is a companion guide to, the self-care patient's guide.
Well, that's
available also on that.
And that's a very important ingredient in healing, because caregiver burnout is reaching epidemic proportions. So that, I think, is a useful adjunct to this.
Yes, it is. I think the caregiver issue is key. I mean, I tell patients if they get resistance from their doctor, find one that would like to do this. Most doctors need help. They really do. And patients don't think of their doctors as someone that needs healing. But burnout is 40% to 50% now in primary care. And that doesn't mean you abandon people who get burnout. It means they need assistance. And so work with them, try to help them get involved in self-care. And one way to do it is to do integrative health, whole person health, because that really restores the soul back to healthcare, and it can help people restore their own soul when they have a chronic illness that they've been struggling with.
Indeed it does. Well, Thank you very much for joining us, Dr. Wayne Jonas, and congratulations on your book. It's really a wonderful capstone on a great career, How Healing Works, Get Well and Stay Well Using Your Hidden Power to Heal. Congratulations, and hopefully we'll hear from you soon.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Hoffman, and thank you for all you do also to get the word on healing out.
It's my pleasure. Thank you. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.